The Delicious Recap dives into Baker's Dozen, Season 1, Episode 14 of Family Matters. We resume with Part 2.
Carl thinks that's fine, but really wants to know if Rachel showed them his picture. And I was like, geez, Carl is really obsessed with the picture. Like, does he want to be Mr. Supermodel or something? Because, like, they're wanting your baking, not your looks.
Carl is the face of this brand. He's like, I just have to make sure my angles look right.
Yeah. Like, they're only going to buy the tarts if I show them my little backside.
He's got your little cheek. Just show a little cheek, and then you get a little tired.
Little tarper, little elbow, little chunky elbow.
Mm-hmm. Like, ooh, you want to see my wrist, boys? Buy one of my tarts.
Oh, Carl could be a great Times Square hooker. Rachel claims she did, and they loved everything and encourages the family to celebrate. And automatically, I thought this was like, what, the second or third time that Rachel was like, yeah, let's celebrate. Because didn't she have like a big celebration dinner for, was it episode 2 when she thought Harriet got the job that she was interviewing for?
Yeah, she decided to get all that stuff and cook big dinner because of Harriet's job.
Be patient with me. I'm going to be so filled with callbacks as we go on with Family Matters.
It's nice. We have the source material. I was thinking about this today. It's a nice thing now. We've established all these episodes of getting to know these characters. Now we have things to call back on. I love it.
Yep. We couldn't do this back in the day when we were only watching week to week and we couldn't see the episode again for like another 5 years when they were rerun again. So this is nice. The era of streaming, we could automatically call back. Harriet tells Rachel to hold on a minute because she believes she's selling too hard and asks what the catch is from the corporation. Carl concerningly asks with a deeper voice, is there bad news? Rachel exclaims, no, it's not really bad news. The regional manager placed an order for all the restaurants in the tri-state area, and they want us to bake 1,000. And then we sense the family responding in quiet hesitation to that workload. After a brief pause, oblivious Eddie genuinely asks, is that bad news? And then Carl says it's not bad news, but acknowledges that 1,000 tarts is a lot of tarts, and as long as it's not needed by Monday, they could do it. And I already knew what was coming. Did you already sense what comic thread they were doing with this?
As soon as I saw Rachel facial expression change, I'm like, ooh, she told them Monday.
Carl then asks, when do they want them? And Rachel somewhat hesitantly says, Monday. Dumb Eddie genuinely thinks he's catching up.
Oh, so that's the bad news.
Carl tries to stay positive and says, no, that's not bad news to him. It just means the family is going to really have to pull together, but optimistically exclaims that they can do it. Rachel loves Carl's attitude and says that's exactly how she felt when she agreed to bake 1,000 tarts. Then she found out they meant 1,000 dozen. And I love how, Rachel is just taking this up a notch. And of course, you got Carl's reaction. 12,000 tarts by Monday? This Monday? Day after tomorrow Monday? It was just beautiful. I love it.
It really was. Carl, he acted this so beautifully. It seems like a real moment between a dad and his wife's sister.
Rachel quietly and kind of nervously smiles in agreement to this. Harriet now confirms to Eddie, that's the bad news. Imaginary gay writer is on fire again.
They are. This episode is Harriet's episode because that writer knew what to give her his lines.
Yeah. Music plays us out. We go to scene 4 and exterior day shot of Winslow House. Might I add, in this exterior day shot, they had a perfect blue and lightly clouded sky.
They did. It was picturesque.
And then cut to kitchen to pick us up from last scene. Carl acknowledges out loud in disbelief that 12,000 tarts have to be made in 2 days. And then there a side note here. I was noticing the way Judy is standing tinily up to Eddie's belly in front of him. It makes me think like someone on staff wants to really notice that height difference between Eddie and Judy. It just keeps coming up.
They keep like silently referencing to it with Judy always being by Eddie. But then I think about sibling relationships. The youngest sibling and the oldest sibling typically have a close relationship.
Yeah, I didn't notice that until like this moment. I mean, I think there's a certain cutesy innocence that Eddie and Judy have in common that Laura can't share. Laura is very much like, oh, I want to grow up and I want to be away from these two idiots. And Eddie and Judy, I think, have a certain childlike naivete about the world that kind of bond them together.
It does, because Eddie's the firstborn, so he's like, oh, all the attention's always on me. and then Judy's the youngest, so everyone's like, oh, let's baby the baby. So they've got that like thing, and Laura's just in the middle, and everyone's just like, oh, that's just Laura, she'll figure it out.
And then Rachel claims somewhat sheepishly that the amount of tarts is not as many as it sounds. Laura says she doesn't know because it does sound like a lot. And then Harriet, with the perfect imaginary gay writer sassy follow-up line, I do know, and it sounds impossible.
She knows. Harriet knows.
Rachel giving me, she was giving me a little gaslighting deja vu with this line to Harriet. Oh, Harriet, sometimes you're so negative. You always see the glass as half empty. I see it as half full. Harriet tells Rachel it's full, all right. It has 12,000 tarts in it. Carl asks Rachel if she really thinks the family can bake 12,000 in 2 days. Rachel exclaims, of course we can, and tells Carl when there's a will, there's a way. And then she continues on with a bunch of stereotypical catchphrases. The family has to dream the impossible dream. When the going gets tough, the tough gets going. Harriet tells Rachel he hates to interrupt her cliches, or she hates to interrupt her cliches, but she's going to have to tell Amalgamated Foods that she cannot commit to this large order. And then Rachel tells Harriet it's not that easy because they gave her in advance. And then, of course, Harriet coming back with that no-nonsense attitude. Well, give them the money back.
Right. That's all you have to do, Rachel. Rachel's delusions really set this off.
Rachel says she cannot do that because on the way home, she stopped off for some odds and ends. We hear a quiet doorbell ring, and Rachel stutteringly says she'll get that, and encourages the family to all go upstairs and check on Richie as she makes a run for the living room. And I was thinking, like, Rachel must have bought something really expensive if she is making, like, all the family watch one baby at the same time.
I knew right away, I'm like, whatever she got is incredibly expensive.
Yeah. After a pause, the rest of the family then runs into the living room to see what's at the door. We see them following a nervous Rachel to the front door. Rachel opens the door to reveal a man carrying in what looks like 3 large bags of flour, and confirming to Rachel that he has her order. Rachel thanks Phil, the delivery guy, and instructs him to bring the flour into the kitchen. Phil casually asks the confused Winslows how they're doing as he walks by them towards the kitchen. Harriet gives that mm-hmm look to Rachel with this line, a few odds and ends, huh, Rachel? Harriet knows what's up.
Harriet knows, and I love Phil. Phil was the silent, like, little assassin in the scene. When he walks past everybody, he's like, hey, folks, how are you? It was the most genuine interaction, but everybody's staring at him like, who is this man, and why does he have these bags of flour?
You think, Phil had this sort of a thought process of like, oh, this family is at odds with Rachel about this whole baking thing, and I'm just loving seeing this without having to take responsibility for it.
He's like, I don't know what I just walked into, but I feel like a grenade went off in this living room because everybody looks shocked right now.
Yeah. And then Rachel nervously smiles while telling Harriet just the bare necessities. And then in comes another delivery guy, Gus, your favorite guy, for Rachel to welcome in. At the time, what I thought was just like this huge Bartlett branded machine that I was thinking like, oh, is this going to be used to squash the ingredients that make the tarts? What do you specifically call this machine?
A mixing stand or standing mixer.
I'll take your word for that. Rachel instructs Gus to follow Phil into the kitchen, wheeling this big Bartlett machine thingy. Carl makes me laugh with this very confused look next to the kids. Then he walks over to Rachel to ask, what's that? Rachel calls it a Bartlett 111, a baby that can mix 300 gallons of batter an hour. That's a lot, right?
That's a whole lot.
Rachel encourages Carl to let her show him how this thing works, and then we get a moment of the family talking over each other while walking toward the kitchen until Harriet says, wait a minute. Rachel, have you lost your mind? Rachel to Harriet, you know what your problem is? You don't know how to take risks. You think Famous Amos was famous before he took risks? No. With each reference that Rachel gave, I had to look him up because I was like, I don't know these people. but you knew Famous Amos.
Yeah, I love Famous Amos cookies. They're delicious.
Okay, well, there you go. Made in 1975 in Los Angeles by Wally Amos, who was actually a former talent agent with the William Morris Agency. So I guess he just got disillusioned with show business and said, you know what? I'm going to make some damn cookies.
It was a good move. He went into the cookie business and that is where he excelled.
There you go. Rachel continues with her gaslighty motivational speech to Harriet. Before she started baking, who was Mrs. Fields? This is our favorite moment, and I've had to look it up. All right, Mrs. Fields' original cookies on Wikipedia. It says it's an American franchiser in the snack food industry with Mrs. Fields and TCBY as its core brands. And it just grew into one of the largest retailers of freshly baked on-premises specialty cookies and brownies in the United States. Where would you rank Mrs. Fields and Famous Amos in your opinion?
In my cookie extensive knowledge and repertoire of cookies. Famous Amos is probably number 6 on my top 10 favorite cookies. And Mrs. Fields is probably like number 15 on my favorite cookies, unless it's from a Mrs. Fields in a mall and they bake the cookies fresh.
Interesting. And then here we go. Dumb Eddie making me laugh with this response to Rachel's, you know, question, who was Mrs. Fields before she started baking? Eddie just chimes in, Miss Fields? And like, you know, just, I was laughing. I was like, yes, Eddie, that's a fucking great line.
That was so great because he's like, Miss Fields. Like, who else would she be?
It's the perfect line because, like, sitcoms of this nature back in 1989, they're full of predictability. And when a line like that hits you, it's like, oh my God, I wasn't expecting that. That was actually a pretty brilliant comeback.
It was the best line of the episode. It was so good.
And should be a t-shirt at some point. Miss Fields?
I might do that.
Yeah, just Eddie's confused face. Miss Fields? All right, Rachel continues to Harriet that Mrs. Fields started out as just an everyday housewife with a few chocolate chips and a dream. Rachel puts her foot down to Harriet and says this family has a dream too and will not rest until Carl is the Prince of Tarts. And it was at this moment, like when I heard Prince of Tarts, I keep on hearing tart throughout this episode. And I'm like, tart? Is that like an offensive slang for somebody? Like, I at first I thought it was like an offensive slang toward gay men, but then I looked it up and it was actually slang to define promiscuous women. So there you go.
You little tart. I was a little tart. Tarting around, all kinds of stuff like that. I love the word tart. Like, you're like, oh, you're a little tart. Something like that I love.
So it doesn't have to be explicitly like limited to gender. It could just be like man, woman, anybody who's sexually promiscuous.
I mean, by the dictionary definition, it's geared towards people who were defined women at birth. But honestly, anybody can be promiscuous. So I feel like a man, woman, or however you identify could be a tart.
And the kids in unison are in like, amen, yeah, amen, agreement with Rachel's statement. And did you just have like a little sassy finger snap to her, amen? Did that happen?
He did. Judy snapped it with her finger like a church grandma saying amen.
Damn, Judy. Okay now with your attitude. I love that. Carl wants to hold this sermon to ask defensively if he's not good enough to be the king of tarts. The kids and Rachel all exclaim at the same time in their own way that Carl can become king of tarts. Harriet thankfully stops all this overwhelming chatter to say that she knows everyone thinks she's the one to say stop when everyone wants to go. But she's done a lot of baking and she knows what everyone wants to accomplish will be impossible. Harriet begs everyone to stop and think about what they're getting into. Look, in real life, sure, there's probably been a number of instances where my mom has tried to instill common sense in me and I'm just like, no, I want to go rebellious. But I got to agree with Harriet on this one. I'm like, y'all are. I mean, if you guys have never at least baked 10 tarts, 20 tarts, you haven't baked any like series of tarts at all, big or small, and all of a sudden you just want to jump into 12,000, okay.
Harriet is so right that it's like you wanted to say everybody, she's showing you the red flags because she knows it's impossible. Forget about the making them, just the baking time alone for 12,000 tarts based on the oven that you have in your home alone. And forget even using other people's ovens. It's impossible to happen in 2 days.
As expected, they're not going to listen. The family actually thinks for a moment before Rachel exclaims, okay, is everybody with me? And then everybody, Carl, the kids, without hesitation, vocally agree all at the same time. They head toward the kitchen. Camera zooms in to a shocked and disappointed Harriet in the living room. Another line from Harriet that I loved from our imaginary game. Gay writer. Shocked and disappointed Harriet. The camera zooms in on her. Now I know how the pastry chef felt on the Titanic. And then the music takes us out to scene 5, which I'm gonna love. Warning. We cut to the kitchen with a close-up of Carl working that Bartlett machine with the flour, and the camera pans out to see him in his chef's hat and flowered up red apron as he's doing his stereotypically embarrassing dad dance to the family singing, you know, she works hard for the money from Donna Summer. The camera pans out more to reveal Rachel, Judy, Laura with hairnets and equally flowered up aprons as they pump what do you call that thing? The filling pumper thing. What do you call that?
A piper.
Like the pipe piper? Like a flute man?
Yeah, like a piper. It's like you're piping the cake stuff out.
Oh, so that's where it comes from. They just took the flute piping thing and applied it to tart filling.
I guess they could go for it. It's like you're like, well, it's like it's a cake bag or whatever, but you put the little thing on the end and it pipes the cake mixture through it.
Huh, interesting. And then I'm just dancing. Like while I'm watching this episode last night, I'm just dancing to the Winslow singing that song and having a good time. It was, I don't know about you, it was just infectious to me. It's like, this is a family enjoying themselves and I'm all about it.
They were having a blast. And then of course I had to listen to Donna Summer all night long after I watched the episode.
As you should. At first I had to Google who sang that song because I had not heard the song in a while. So when I found out it was Donna, it was like, oh yes, Last Dance. Oh God, don't get me started on Donna Summer. And she's a gay icon, if I'm not mistaken.
She's a gay staple. I knew who Donna Summer was when I was first born. It's like, it was just in my blood. And I was like, oh, okay, we know who Donna Summer is. And for all the people out there who think it's Donna Summers, it's not Summers, it's just Summer.
Yeah, please, singular, not plural. So I guess you've confirmed it. It's sort of like a gay rite of passage to know who Donna Summer is once you come out the womb.
I guarantee it. If we have any listeners who are queer, queer adjacent, or have been to a queer club, you know, at either 2 a.m. or 4 a.m. when the club closes, Last Dance is the last song they play.
That's very appropriate. I love that. And anyway, we go into the kitchen. It looks packed with tarts and pink boxes that resemble, did you know Crumble cookies?
Yes, Crumble's here. I love their cookies.
Yeah, they're good. Yeah, they're also here in the Burlington area in Vermont too. And for a while, literally every Friday, my wife and I, like we would order a box of Crumble cookies for ourselves, and then we just decided, you know what, we're so tight on money, let's save money.
Those cookies are like $56 a cookie, but they're so good.
They really are. And then Carl encouraging his daughters to, you know, whip it up, baby, while they're all singing. And then just as I was about to ask if Harriet is helping, when Carl dances over to the countertop, camera reveals a much less flower aproned Harriet setting some charts on the countertop and singing along with the family. And I loved Harriet giving it to the madness, having a good time. And also I thought a very accurate black mom thing where it's like, I'll help you out, but I'm not going to get super, super dirty.
I love it. Like Harriet said, she bakes, she knows how to cook. That's why her area all around her, if you look at the scene, there is no mess or chaos, but around everybody else, it's destroyed.
I didn't pick up on that. That's actually a pretty good point. Harriet knows what she's doing. All right. So I think it was Rachel who screamed after a lyric. I think they were like, they were having fun and money. And then was it Rachel who was like, woo! Remember that?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then, they're just really getting into the baking and singing thing. Rachel tells Laura and Judy that isn't this all great? Because not only are they making extra money, but they are also making a memory. Rachel, and I loved how she was just shaking her head in delight. Like she heard the good word in church. Oh, I'm making a memory now. Yes.
She's encouraging the family. Rachel is like the cheerleader of this family. That's what I love about her.
Yeah. Maybe not the most intelligent cheerleader, maybe a gaslighty cheerleader, but nonetheless, what we love about a cheerleader is that when we need infectious enthusiasm, we can count on the cheerleader.
Yes. As the cloud, we're going over the cliff, we need some cheer, and she is good.
As our car is going over to the cliff and we are about to die, let's have someone that's like, oh, rah, this is fun. Yay.
She knows how to, she's the Titanic. She loves it.
In comes hairnet wearing Eddie from the back porch door, carrying another batch of tarts and confirming to the family that Mrs. Cordini says they can use her oven all night, but only if they stop singing. And look, aside from the singing request, I was also touched because hearing something like that from a neighbor, to me, it just has this sense of community that I always find touching when I watch shows like these, like, oh, you know, your neighbor helping out each other, blah, blah, blah. Like, I'm sure Jesus said something about this in the Bible, but yeah, just that thing of like neighbors in the neighborhood looking out for each other. I like that.
Me too. When Jesus went and asked for a cup of flour, I'm pretty sure Mary gave him a cup of flour. So I can get like you going over to your neighbor. You're like, hey, can I use your oven? Thank you.
Did that really happen? Did Jesus ask for a cup of flour in the Bible?
I mean, at some point he had to. Like they were eating bread. He could only make wine from water unless he could make like flour from air. If this is the thing, tell me because I need to know.
Yes, please. If you're a passionately Christian listener, let us know. We are so curious. All right. Up and again, here we go. Harriet, she's got a shots fired line when she clearly isn't in love with the not singing. Remember this line? That woman doesn't have any class. Look at Mr. Cordini.
I love Harriet saying that. Just like the typical housewife thing. She's like, I'm a better housewife than her. I don't know what she's doing.
Right. Maybe you should focus on your husband first before you criticize us, Mrs. Cordini. And then as expected, in comes Steve. He's wearing a... Did you notice? I thought it was a rather plaidy ensemble. Like it was blue plaid, gray and white plaid.
It was very plaid, but I love mixing plaids together. So I loved it. I was like, ooh, this is a cute little outfit for Steve.
You love the harmony of a diversity of plaids.
Yes. Bring it all together. Plaid should not be separated.
Yeah. Another shirt idea. Steve Urkel with his outfit in this scene. And then under the picture of Steve, a diversity of plaids.
I would wear that.
Steve walks over to Laura to ask if she's busy when she clearly is. Laura rolls her eyes and tells Steve she doesn't even have time to be mean. Steve says great, and maybe he'll stay a while and ask if she can help, if he can help. Rachel thinks for a moment and comes to the conclusion that Steve's help would actually be useful and asks him if he has an oven that they can use for cheap. Steve offers his oven for free in exchange for Laura's hand in marriage. Aw, what an adorable blackmailish arranged marriage that he's trying to put out there.
And nothing says love like necessity.
Carl is behind Steve and looks like he doesn't like that idea, but surprised me actually when he genuinely asked Steve. He was like, oh, exactly how big is your oven? I was like, damn, Carl.
Look, Laura wants to enterprise. She better be prepared to enterprise.
She better be prepared to sell her body, her mind, her soul, everything.
For that oven, these cupcakes aren't going to bake themselves with a tart.
Yeah, right. So Laura, of course, she's like, oh, Dad, like, really? You would sell me for this? And Steve is now amazed by the Bartlett 111 and asks if that's what really is. He's like, oh my God, that Bartlett 111, is that really it? And Carl confirms that it is indeed the Bartlett 111. He asked Steve, how did he know? Steve says they have a machine just like this at the donut shop downtown, and it feels it necessary to add that a mouse fell into the machine once while they were making jelly donuts, which I think is fitting because I was like, oh, Steve was probably delighted to hear that since, according to the Laura's First Date episode, I mean, he's a mouse eater. So maybe he just was eating those mouse donuts like they were candy.
That's what I'm assuming. This whole scene put a terrible image in my head of Steve telling the story. I imagine a mouse falling into the mixer and being obliterated into this batter. And it looks like cherries getting mixed into it or something. It was the most disgusting image I had in my head.
Yeah, I mean, to the writing staff, it's like a comical, absurd moment. But when you think about it, it's like, wait, no. Like, now you're just giving us the image of mouse guts just being splattered all over the place in that donut machine.
Yes, here's your mouse liver donut. Like, what?
Oh, God. Carl is disgusted by the thought of jelly donuts with mouse guts, exclaims to Steve that that's terrible. Steve says not really because the donut shop didn't get one complaint, which I think is concerning. I think that the shop should be shut down if they were, you know, putting mouse guts into donuts, knowing it, and then just saying like, let's just see if anybody notices. And even if people didn't notice, it's like, oh, I don't know. There could be some contaminated shit like that that kills somebody like 25 years from now.
There could be. I mean, this is the plague. This is how the plague started. These are plague donuts, and you're going to have the plague and the jelly donut.
Okay. Plaguey donut. Love my plaguey donut. Carl asked Steve exactly what donut shop was this. Steve thinks for a moment and says that it was the one next to the police station. And then Steve makes me laugh when he asks this. You ever eat there, Carl? As if he doesn't know what Carl does for a living.
He knew. He's like, I wonder if Carl knew about the rats the donut, which is hilarious because the police catch rats and there's rats in their donut.
Do they really? So like on their off time, do they just kind of like hunt down rats in one of those potholes or something?
No, but I would love to see the police do that.
I'm confused. Are we talking about the same thing? Are we talking about literal rats or talking...
We're talking about people who snitch on their co-defendants. That's a rat.
Okay. I just had this image of the police just like, all right, it's a slow night. Let me go arrest rats from potholes.
I mean, that's a good use of time for the police. Clean up these streets. If you really want to clean them up, clean them up. But
yeah, especially in cities like Chicago and New York, where the rats are the size of my arm.
Look, and in New York, the rats are aggressive. They will come up to you and ask you for food or take your wallet.
Yeah, and that actually almost happened to me. Last time I was in New York over the summer, like I was walking back to the hotel from this piano cabaret club with a friend of mine. And yeah, I saw like a long ass rat just casually just running with cheese. And I'm like, oh, okay, there's a New York City rat. Check that off my bucket list. I've seen one.
You've seen one. John, you're lucky you made it away unscathed. Those rats out there will shank you. Take your wallet and go buy a burger.
Like the badasses they are.
Mm-hmm.
So Carl has a what have I done look on his face for a second before telling the family a couple of times to get Steve out of this house. Steve says no need to see him to the door because he'll show himself out, and then the music plays us out. So this was weird to me because I was expecting Urkel to do like a very slapsticky, clumsy exit. He just casually exits like normal. Like, what was that?
It was like, hey, just so you guys remember, Urkel's a part of the show. Like, that's what I feel like he was there in this moment, because he served no purpose.
So we go to scene 6, exterior night shot of Winslow House, cut to kitchen with Rachel, Laura, Judy, Eddie still in their hairnets, aprons all flowered up while working on these tarts. They're all clearly tired. Laura urges Judy to try to keep up, and Judy says she can't because she has a stomach ache. And I almost wanted to toughen up Judy. Like, Judy, take some Pepto-Bismol or take a shit. Come on, you agreed to do this.
Judy is what we're seeing when child labor goes on for too long. You haven't given her required break after 8 hours of work, and she needs a break. Her body is like, leave me alone, I'm done.
Yeah, and Laura tells Judy she's aching because she eats more than she makes. Judy is not having Laura's attitude. She shoots back, how would you like a tart up your nose? I love Judy standing up to Laura. I think this is the second time that we've seen this, because the first time was the quilt episode, and now it's like, no, you may be the middle child, you may be older than me, but I'm gonna show you some.
Mm-hmm. And Judy is like, don't you mess with me. And once I am over it, I'm over it.
Yep. And then Harriet gives an exhausted sigh, walks over to Judy, tells her it's way past her bedtime as she physically walks Judy away from the tarts, because I think Harriet secretly realizes, oh, we're kind of like doing illegal child labor with Judy. So let's get her up to bed.
I feel like Harriet was like, okay, Judy, you've had one too many. It's time to shut down the bar for tonight. It is last call. You need to go upstairs. She's on a sugar high.
Right? Talking about nose tarting. Come on now. Nobody wants nose tarting at 4 a.m. All right. So Judy looks at the tarts, tells her mom that she hates them now. And Harriet says, we all do, honey. As she walks Judy further toward the living room. But before she does, Harriet snaps at Rachel. Rachel, I'm going to get you for this.
And rightfully so, she should. Because Harriet knows this is all Rachel's fault. Rachel's the one who got us here.
Yep. After Harriet exits, Rachel says to herself, what a grouch. Laura proposes to Rachel that they ought to take away one of mom's shares. Rachel urges everyone to keep moving because they're slowing down. Carl tells Rachel that he's mixing as fast as he can and asks how many more of these stinking tarts do they need. Rachel thinks for a second and then says 9,432. Automatically, I was like, Jesus Christ. It's like the middle of the night, maybe 3, 4 a.m. at this point. Like, I just wanted to get extra hands somewhere for the Winslow to just sub in for them and have them go to bed, because y'all are not getting that done.
They're not. They've only made, I think, like, what, a quarter of what they need done by this point, and yeah. It's already nighttime.
And then Carl sighs in disappointment, and then Laura complains that they'll never make it by Monday. Eddie walks over to his dad, puts his arm over Carl's shoulder, and asks, when are they going to take a break? Carl doesn't know and tells Eddie to ask his Aunt Rachel, because she's the head tart. Coming from the man who wants to be known as the king of tarts, aren't you supposed to be the head tart?
Right, he should be the head of this and everything.
Not good leadership, Carl. Not good leadership. So Rachel gives Carl a really look for a moment and then tells him to come on because they've got more tarts to make. Carl looks at Rachel's work and tells her she's putting too much filling in those tarts. As Rachel asks what Carl means, she accidentally squirts filling on his apron. Carl looks at his apron unhappily and tells Rachel, you shot your bag at me, as if this woman wants to fight. And I don't know. I, at this point, I was like, you know, Carl, you're dirty enough as it is with the flour all over you. It probably doesn't matter, does it, to have a little filling squirt on your apron?
I guess it wouldn't matter because they were all covered in flour.
Yeah. So what is a little filling jizz on the old chest there? Come on now.
Right. Wear it with pride. It's your pearl necklace.
All right. Rachel apologizes, but Carl believes she did that on purpose. Rachel exclaims, I did not. Carl says, you did too. And then they just go back and forth like children. Did not, did too, did not, did too. Before Rachel stops it and acknowledges that they're both tired and shouldn't waste energy on fighting. Carl agrees with Rachel that they should get back to work. Suddenly, Rachel looks at the filling and says, darn. Carl asks what's wrong now. And just as Rachel is saying, my bag is clogged. She accidentally squirts filling again, but this time onto Carl's face. Rachel nervously laughs at her big mistake. Carl can only say, okay, okay. After a moment, he looks around and proclaims that he's not going to be Mr. Nice Guy anymore. Carl holds a huge bowl of batter and eagerly stirs it toward Rachel like he's about to start a food fight. And Rachel urges him not to do something he's going to regret. Carl says he's not going to regret this. He's going to love it. Rachel quickly gets to war mode herself. She gets a smaller bowl of flour and exclaims, "All right, stand back. I've got flour here and I'm not afraid to use it." Were you entertained by this? Were you overwhelmed? Who were you while you were watching this family moment?
While I'm watching this family moment, I would have known that I would have been Judy Winslow. I would have been out of that kitchen by this point because I feel like everybody's over everybody at this point. But I also would have been encouraging them to fight with the food.
Oh, so you want to be like a sort of gaslighty, encouraging bystander. You want to watch it, but you didn't want to be a part of it.
I would have been messy. I'd be like, "Rachel, why did you do that? You knew that bag wasn't clogged." And I would have just kept going just to get Carl angry to throw something at Rachel.
All right. Carl says, "This is all silly." Both him and Rachel laugh in seeming agreement. Carl offers a truce. Rachel accepts. They both continue to laugh. And then, just what I expect would happen, Carl backs out on his truce. He flings a nice line of tart batter towards Rachel's chest. Rachel is shocked as Carl says, "Sucker!" But he was like saying it in like a really like Chinese-y kind of accent. Like, I was like, "Oh, okay, Carl. Carl sensei."
It was an interesting accent.
Rachel exclaims to Carl, "Say your prayers, Winslow," as she has that bowl of flour ready to throw at him. But Carl ducks behind Laura just as Rachel throws that flour, and it lands all over Laura instead. Laura, of course, clearly not happy with the flour being thrown on her, while Eddie clearly is just laughing. He's just enjoying this in the background because he's just like, "Yes, this mean middle child is finally getting her due."
They covered Laura completely. Her face was covered.
And did you notice, like, when she opened her eyes amongst all the flour covered in on her face? Like, I don't know about you, but me, I was just like, "Oh, Laura, be careful. Don't get that in your eyes."
It's because you're such an adult. I was thinking the same thing. I was like, "Oh my God, this poor baby's eyes."
Yeah. Yeah. Already I'm just thinking like, "Oh God." Like I was her parent or something. Like, no. Let's wash that out so you don't get flour blind eyes.
Hey guys.
Yeah. Laura wastes no time, and getting a bunch of flour, she just dumps it all on Rachel. And then those two try to wrestle that flour bag off of each other as Eddie becomes every 90s kid in a movie or TV show. He exclaims, "Food fight!" And Eddie says, "Hey, Dad," to Carl. And he's got that mischievous look on his face while holding two tarts in his hands. Carl says to Eddie, "You would not dare." And then Eddie gives a laugh and then just smacks a full thing of tart on his dad's face as if he's not going to get good punishment later for that.
It was hilarious. Eddie had my favorite moment in the scene. When he hit Carl laughing, I laughed.
Oh my God. Eddie is loudly cackling at his dad's tart-filled face. Carl wipes the tart off his face. He does not hesitate to shove the other tart Eddie is holding on to his face. And Eddie wipes the tart off his face in speechless embarrassment. And then we just get a full-on food fight madness between Carl and Eddie, Rachel and Laura. And then instantly, I'm wondering, oh God, how is Harriet going to react to this fucked up situation when she walks in?
Mm-hmm. Immediately, I'm like, her kitchen is destroyed.
Oh, yes. Steve enters from the back porch door fully dressed for a Christmas winter day. Like, what was this? I mean, so he goes from his like plaidy outfit, and I think he had on a Christmas sweater, didn't he?
It looked Christmassy. I think it might have been a Christmas sweater.
I guess he's just one of those people that love to still celebrate Christmas in January of 1990.
Christmas in January. There's something interesting when he walks in. I'm just like, what are you wearing and why are you wearing this? But it just made it all worth it.
And then so he has the sweater, he has the scarf, earmuffs. I was wondering why he wasn't dressed like this for his previous entrance, because it was just like, what, a few hours ago maybe?
It was. So I'm thinking Herb and Diane made him change, or these were the only clothes he had in his laundry and just put them on and came back out the house.
All right. Steve shouts, "Excuse me, excuse me," a couple of times to the family to get their attention. And he does it like just casually, as if like he's not seeing a shit show food fight. Like, "Just excuse me, can I just get your attention?" And then once the family is attentive to Steve, he says he saw their lights were on and asks if they have any food to eat. Is this a new day or are we like late night? Like, I can't tell if we're like late night or early morning at this point.
I think we're still late night. I don't think Steve has been allowed back in his house yet.
When you say that, I just want to lock up Herb and Diane immediately.
Because they're terrible people. Herb and Diane are the worst parents in existence.
We see Rachel and Laura laughing at Steve as they're doused in food. And then we get a wider shot of the four Winslow family members all at once just hurling food at Steve. Winslow Russell family then continues back to their food fight with each other. Steve is appropriately flabbergasted at suddenly being covered with all this tart batter, all this food, when that clearly wasn't what he was expecting when he was walking in looking like Mr. Christmas Winter Day. And then finally, Harriet comes in from the living room to exclaim outrage at this madness. Hey, 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 hey! Once she finally gets the family to stop food fighting, Harriet raises her voice. She tells the family to look at themselves, look at her kitchen, and asks if they all lost their damn minds. I mean, she didn't say damn, but she might as well have because she was angry.
She should have given us a Florida from Good Times damn, damn, damn. I would have screamed. I don't know why the writers didn't do this, and you should have done that. She should have come in and done that. But did you notice how big this soundstage is? This soundstage is massive.
So what I noticed actually was the flooring, like the it was like dark red padded flooring that they had for the kitchen. And I think that the flooring was different and they could have used a bigger soundstage to accommodate this food fight. I think that they thought like, oh, this food fight is going to be madness. So we had to make some adjustments. I didn't notice the size of the soundstage, but if they had made that change, it was probably because of this food fight.
I think it was because of the food fight and that flooring, that's anti-fatigue matting that's like in restaurants. So if you ever seen like a restaurant kitchen and it kind of looks like you're walking on this like waffle pattern and it's orange, it's anti-slip and it's supposed to make it so your knees don't hurt when you're standing all day. And it's pretty cool. But I was looking at that later in the episode. I have a point that comes in with that for what happens at the end.
So after Harriet explodes on the family, they all go silent for a moment. And then Rachel exclaims that Carl started it. Carl exclaims that he did not. This bickering goes on back and forth. Yes, you did. You did. I did not. Yes, you did. Yeah. And then eventually tart-faced Eddie just steps in like a deer in headlights and says in a very forced Gumpy way, I was just minding my own business.
I love that Eddie's just along for the ride.
And then Steve exclaims innocently that I just came over for a snack. As one does when their parents are absolutely abusive.
Poor Steve.
And a still angry Harriet does not care who started it because all of this is over. Harriet is not even going to start on how everyone is acting like children, how they destroyed her kitchen, or how this dumb idea to begin with. She's not going to say that, even though she clearly just did. But I love that.
I love it. She said, I am not going to say it. And I'm going to talk to them like that for now on, at least for the next month, and say, I'm not going to say this while saying it.
Yeah. And then she just walks over to the countertop to calm down for a little bit after that riveting performance. And then the Food Fight family slowly tries to get themselves together. Carl breaks the silence by passively aggressively claiming he's not going to say Rachel started it. And then Rachel passively aggressively claims that she's not going to say she had lousy help. And then Harriet may not have gotten the passive aggressiveness and just says, all right, good. I'm glad that we're all agreed. But nope, a slightly hushed Carl and Rachel go back to the, you started it, you did it, you said it. So they do that bickering. And then Harriet screams at them to stop. Carl and Rachel follow that order and react with pouty faces like children. We see Steve licking some of the batter on him. And then, of course, he has to ask this comical question, which I thought was a great question. Can I have a glass of milk to go with my face?
Which, surprisingly, most of the batter did not land on his face.
Right, right, right. The writers just wanted to be like, hey, here's a funny character. Give him a funny line.
I wish they would have added a little bit more to his face. It would have been more comedical. Like, if we've gotten, like, a good, like, glop just on his face.
Yeah, a nice batter facial to Steve's face. Winslow family gives a really look to Urkel as music closes out this scene. And this is when I just noticed that flooring that we had talked about. But did you have your point about the flooring at this point, or was it later on in the episode?
Later on.
Okay. All right. Let me know. So we go to scene 7, exterior day shot of Winslow house, cut to living room where we see Carl, Harriet, Eddie, and Laura completely passed out on the couches and chairs with their baking clothes still on. And, you know, Jesus, you could tell the family they're completely tired from the all-nighter. Apparently, they could not remember that they had beds upstairs. The way that they're laying down on the couch and chairs, it looks absolutely uncomfortable.
It does not look comfortable. My only thought was, instead of them going upstairs, there's still stuff baking, technically, and they don't have to mix anything else. So they're like, oh, let's just all stay down here. So if one of us falls asleep, at least somebody will hear the timer to stop the oven or something. That's what I was thinking.
That's actually great logic. I didn't even think about that. Wow, that's good. Yeah. And then Carl is in the middle of a, I guess you could call it daymare, since it's not night anymore. So he's in the middle of his daymare and he vocally exclaims,
no, I don't want to be the king of tarts. No, get the mouse, tarts coming, hit the deck.
Laura wakes up to notice her dad and walks over to him to shake him out of his daymare and remind him that he's dreaming. After Carl wakes up, Judy arrives downstairs in her Winslow family cult robe. And look at Judy. She looked like she had the best beauty sleep ever while everybody was slaving away.
That is what I love. Judy came in and said, I'm the star. You see that I'm fully cleaned. There's not a drop of flour on me. What happened to you heathens?
What happened to you peasants? And then Judy asks what time it is. Eddie says it's 8 o'clock. Judy asks everyone if they finished the tarts. And Carl confirms that they did finish 2 hours ago. They finished 2 hours ago. And Aunt Rachel took the tarts to the restaurant. And then we have a very tired Rachel entering from the living room front door. I was interested in her outfit. She had like a weighty black hat, black coat. What was underneath her coat? I was having trouble figuring out what that fabric was. Was it like a silky thing?
It was kind of like a silky polyester blend is what it looked like. Like a, how do I describe it? Like one of those like dress shirts, but not really like a dressy shirt.
Okay. Okay. Cause like, it was one of those things where I could like graze my hand over it, you know, where you could like graze your hand back and forth and it almost feels like you're grazing fur, like that kind of fabric. That's what I was kind of feeling from that shirt.
Yeah, kind of like velour.
Rachel closes the door. She exclaims, "Oy vey," very tired. And that's what I say from time to time. I feel like that is like the old man Yiddish tired thing to say. And I love it.
I have never said that in my life, but I love hearing people say it.
Yes. Try saying it, because when you say it, you'll feel like you are an old man who has owned his right in the world.
Okay. When I say it, then that means somebody brings me a glass of scotch. I don't have to move from that point off the couch.
Damn. Does that put to sleep a glass of scotch?
Not to put me asleep, but I am an old man who has done his duty, so I better get my scotch on the rocks.
All right, fine. You know, your scotch and your NASCAR and your golden retriever, you're good to go with your recliner.
John, this sounds like I should be in Tennessee.
No. Don't go to Tennessee. For your own good, do not go to Tennessee.
Okay.
All righty. Rachel puts her coat on the rack. Carl asks if they got a check, and Rachel confirms they did and takes it out of her purse and suddenly goes from tired to excited as she hands the check to Laura, who is eager to see it. And then Laura opens up the check and exclaims, "Wow, we're rich." Eddie looks at the check and says, "Whoa, that is a lot of money." Laura shows Judy and she just has her mouth open in shock. I was like, they could have given Judy a line, but I guess not.
They get something, at least a deep breath.
Yeah, but you know, they figure like, oh, Judy just woke up and she came in all beautifully dressed in her robe, looking all well rested. So maybe the writers felt like that was enough of a presence for Judy.
That or secretly Judy's like, oh, this is pittance. I make more money than this in my sleep.
Laura hands the check to Carl and Rachel cuts in to say that they still have to deduct a few expenses. Carl flabbergastingly, he asks, like what? Rachel says they got to deduct flour and eggs and bakery racks, pots and pans, the Bartlett 111, and the rental trailer to haul the tarts into the restaurant. And automatically I was like, this woman just really spent that advance, did she?
She did. Now this is where the flooring comes into play for me, because yeah, that amount of flooring, that anti-fatigue flooring, is expensive. Like that size, when I Googled it, would have cost at least about $10,000 on its own just to have. So how much money did they make for Rachel to spend all of this?
So that's interesting that you say that, because I guess I was looking at that flooring from the point of, oh, this is a decision that the staff has made that is not going to play a place into the story. But it's actually, yeah, I mean, you know, even though they don't directly reference the flooring on the show, you could make an argument that, yes, Rachel did spend money on that.
That's what I'm thinking, because I'm like, Rachel's so set on, like, when we had her in the other episode of, I need everything that she would have in this business for us to do this business from home. So I, in my head, I'm looking at, I'm like, okay, as I look at this scene, and maybe I'm just looking way too into it, because it could have just been a choice from the staffing or from like the producers and be like, oh, we just need this in here for safety or something. But just looking at it, I'm like, if you went and got the stand mixer, you got all this flour, we got to think about, are there eggs in this? What did you use to make the cream? All these ingredients that you got had to take away from all of your money for 12,000 tarts. I mean, that had to be at least 30 $50,000 they spent on just supplies.
Damn. Again, how are you claiming that you have not done intelligent math in 20 years when you clearly look like and sound like a mathematician right now?
I don't know, but I am a shopaholic. So I know that when I pull up the price tag for something, I imagine it being the price tag for other things. And that's how I do my math. Shop math. That's going to be my new college course. You guys take it.
There you go. Andrew A.J. Vennertot. Look for him at the University of Nebraska or NYU. Either one.
I'll take NYU. Nebraska sounds like I'm going to be pushing cows.
Yeah. And probably has Tennessee vibes too, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, oh, yeah. It does sound a little Tennessee.
Tennessee-ish. All right. So Harriet takes the check from Carl to have a look. She tells Rachel to cut to the chase and tell the family how much profit has been gained. Rachel nervously shrugs her shoulders for a little bit and then sheepishly says, $24. And I fucking laughed out loud because I honestly thought, my naive self, not knowing math well, I thought she was going to say something like the hundreds or the thousands. And that's what I also realized, that like, oh, okay, you know, obviously, the more exaggerated you are with this, the more funny it's going to be. And yeah, I mean, the idea that this family, they slaved away all weekend for just 24 measly dollars, that is funnier. So I found that line to be hilarious.
I did find it funny myself. I laughed. I'm like, oh, this is hilarious. They made $24.
Yeah, they made $24. And Laura asks in disbelief, we work straight through the weekend for a measly $24 a piece? And then Rachel sheepishly says, no. And then reveals that they just made $24 total, which I laughed at and still thought, like, I thought that all along. I mean, Laura said $24 a piece, and I was like, oh, okay, maybe that's not so bad. But yeah, once they said total, it was like, okay, yeah, no, that seems about right.
It does, it does. You know what? And the thing is, I wouldn't be mad if I was in the scenario, if I were them. To spend all that money and at least not be in the negative, it's still kind of a positive worry.
All right. Yeah, good point. And then Carl exclaims in shock that the family just made $4 a piece. Laura seems to be taking on Rachel's gaslighting when she says she knew this would never work, when clearly she was all for this idea. And then Harriet calls Laura out on her BS and sarcastically says, excuse me, Miss Black Enterprise, weren't you the one that wanted to take this family corporation public? Rachel, for once, here we go. Here's a defining moment for Rachel. She actually takes responsibility and tells Harriet she was the one who put the idea in Laura's head and claims she always has dumb ideas. Harriet, being the great bigger sister, says that it was not a dumb idea. It just wasn't completely thought out. And then we hear sappy message background music play as Rachel says she thought it would be fun for the family to start their own business. Carl steps in and insists it's his fault because he should have kept the secret recipe a secret. And I was in disagreement. I was like, no, Carl, this is on Rachel.
Yeah, this is on Rachel. Filing away secrets only destroys families, Carl. So you should understand that. But this is Rachel's fault. Rachel is the person who did this, even though you had multiple times to say stop and listen to your wife. So, you know what? Actually, if I put it on a percentage system, Rachel is 35% at fault. Carl is about 25% at fault. And then the entire family fills in the rest of whatever that percentage is.
Really? So like with the entire family, meaning Eddie, Laura, and Judy?
Yep, because y'all all saw us running towards this cliff and nobody said, hey, press the brake.
And then we now see a kinder version of Carl and Rachel's bickering. I love that. I love that. Rachel steps in and insists again that it's her fault because she pushed Carl into it. It was, you remember when they were just patting each other? No, 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 no. It's my fault. No, 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 no. It's my fault.
Yes.
Yeah, so this goes on for a while. Carl says it's his fault because he put his name on it. And Rachel steps in like saying, no, 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 it's my fault. And then Harriet just steps in with a no, 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 no herself as well, and claims that it was everybody's fault, which is sort of true, except hers. Well, I mean, do you think that if there's any of this that is at fault for Harriet? Because I know you remember, I remember you saying that Harriet was kind of at fault for the Carl Mr. Bad Wrench thing. Like, she could have done something more to stop Carl from building Mama Winslow a shower. So in this case, do you think Harriet is completely free from fault?
No, Harriet is completely free from fault in this one. She went above and beyond to try and keep bringing the family back to reality, and nobody listened to her. So Harriet is not at fault. And then on top of that, instead of destroying the family dynamic with an I told you so moment, she was like, I'm going to get in here and help you guys, and we're still going to fail. But as we fail, we're going to have a smile on her face.
All right. And then Laura says that they did actually bake 12,000 tarts, to put a positive spin on it, and not counting the ones that they threw at each other. That's pretty amazing. Eddie, of course, says, yeah, I like the food fight. Harriet says she knows one thing for sure, and that's that this weekend, the Winslows proved they could do anything when they could put their minds to it. She was... Yep, that sassy head nod. Harriet was like, yep, we learned something like we're going to church.
Mm-hmm. She said, let's take it to Jesus. Make sure that everybody knows that there's a life lesson here. And we did it.
Rachel says, isn't that the truth? We are amazing. And now we got to set our mind to cleaning up this kitchen. Rachel and the family, they all agree on this sentiment and they get up to go clean the kitchen together. As they enter the kitchen, they all start to notice the very big shit show of a mess that they're going to have to clean. And as expected, Harriet says, all right, let's get back in. And then, of course, we get that callback of the Winslow kids in succession giving excuses to try to get away from this. Homework, homework, Rodney. Again, Eddie, work on your excuses. But, you know, I know you're like, oh, no, Eddie, go to your video game.
Get out of there, Eddie. The video game is the saving grace. Get out.
I mean, what video game, given the time, what video game do you think Eddie is going to play?
I am pretty sure it's Ninja Turtles. It's either Ninja Turtles in Time, Ninja Turtles, the just original Ninja Turtles. It could be Ninja Turtle Fighters, or it could be Battletoads, actually, because Battletoads was out around that time. Or it could have been the new Super Mario. There's a lot of different games it could have been that were cooperative and that you need to play with other people. But I am going to go with Ninja Turtles, Turtles in Time.
Wow. You have your early 90s video game knowledge down on pack.
I love video games. That was my language.
There you go. And then Harriet, Carl, and Rachel are the ones left in the kitchen. Harriet, they pay someone $24 to clean this up. Rachel says, now that's a good idea. Family walks away satisfyingly to living room as music plays and credits come up to end this episode. Side note, I think they're going to need a kid because even in 1990, I doubt that an adult is going to clean all that up for just $24, unless I'm wrong. Yeah,
not a chance in this world. I don't think an adult would clean that up in any time period for $24.
Right. All right. Well, the end. Closing thoughts. What do you got?
A pretty good episode. It was a fun time. This, again, was like a slice of life episode for me where it's just a fun time, a fun moment. And I was wrong. 100% of the episode takes place in the house. They don't show any other scene outside of the house aside, you know, from the cuts to the outside, but it all takes place in the house and in this moment. And this is the most time we've gotten in the kitchen. I don't think we really saw any other scenes except other than the living room.
You may be right. And I think it's appropriate that this episode took place in the house all the time because it was a very Winslow family episode. We've seen past episodes where there's a little balance. It's like, okay, we got some Winslow family and then we have some attention on the guest stars and how they affect the Winslow family story. But this one was all just, hey, reminding people that even though we have this soon to be big star Urkel coming in, changing things, this is the foundation. This is the Winslow family. This is why we love them. So like I said at the beginning, just a nice, comforting, fun, heartwarming, good time. And I cannot wait to see what we get into further on into the season.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. I mean, this episode is some pretty big firsts. We got the first time we acknowledge that Mama Winslow's not there and what she's doing in her absence. We've got the first time in the show's history at this point. We actually know what day it is that a lot of things are happening on. And we know that this is what happens for the Winslows on the weekend. They don't really go out and do much except for Eddie to go play video games.
Yeah, they're working for the weekend. What is that song? Who sings that song? Working for the weekend.
Oh, I don't know whose song that is, but I like it. I just don't know whose song it is.
Yeah, I think it was a very 80s song. But anyway, hey, for you listening, where you can find us if you want to keep in touch and say your feedback about this episode and our recap of it, thedeliciousrecap@gmail.com. Send all your questions, comments, concerns there. We would love to hear from you. If you like social media, that's okay as well. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Threads, TikTok, and YouTube at Family Matters Rewatch Pod. And Andrew, how can people follow you?
Well, you can follow me at AJ Vanderton on all of the socials, including Facebook. I am there. I have returned. And it is still Facebook. So I will be on there. I will post things. But I will have very limited time there. Maybe one day I'll post my office hours. And if you want to catch me on Facebook, it's only between those hours. But just look up Vanderton. That's all you have to look for.
Oh, when you say it's still Facebook, do you mean it's very 2024 election-y right now?
It's very 2024 election-y. It's like, oh, I feel like I'm like on this weird website with people posting very weird things. A lot to do with the war right now. And, you know, I don't know much about it, so I'm not going to comment on the war itself. I just don't like to see war stuff. So I'm probably not going to spend too much time on Facebook other than podcast focused things.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that. And I think you're referring to Israel and Palestine, that whole thing.
Yeah, that and the war in Ukraine. There's a lot of stuff. And again, I don't have a comment on the dynamics because I don't know enough about it to comment on it. It's just, I just don't want to see it. I don't want to see kids and innocent people getting hurt. So that's why I try to avoid Facebook.
Understandable. My Facebook experience is oddly different. It's actually like just people posting like exciting things happening in their real lives, whether it's children or career related things. I follow a lot of 90s stuff. So, you know, that will pop up, which is very appropriate for our podcast. So, I cannot remember. I think it was, I think it's been like maybe 6 or 7 years since I've seen a very heavy, like politically charged Facebook post. So yeah. I think that just choosing who you follow, choosing to unfollow, like that plays a big difference in what you see on your newsfeed every day. So
it does. I'm probably going to stop following people and everything. I'm just hoping my algorithm will change the more I like 90s and Family Matters stuff. So fingers crossed.
All right. Teasing our next episode. Oh, I love this one. So I think this one was another Rich Corell directed episode because I remember watching this in preparation for our interview with him. The Big Union, season one, episode 15. If I'm not mistaken, I think this is when Carl reunites with like his high school singing buddies. And the end scene is just great. That's what I remember from this episode. So that is the original air date of January 19th, 1990. Cannot wait for that. Andrew, would you please take us out?
I am excited for this because just like high school reunions, the punch at it, it's full of deliciousness. So we're let the deliciousness ring.